This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Podcast Nation, let me just say this very simply. This is one of the most selfish podcasts in the history of the Gary V Audio Experience because I want to be able to have my grandkids ask me what it was like to know this gentleman, because there is borderline 0.0% chance in my mind, God willing he stays healthy, that he doesn't become one of the most profound, most important artists of this generation. And it is my incredible honor to have Fidenza Tyler on the show. Tyler, how are you?
Gary, I'm doing great. I mean, what an intro to the show. I don't know. I mean, you're really setting a high bar there for me.
I'm sandbagging.
No, listen. Yeah, maybe lower those expectations just a tiny bit. I'm super excited. It's a real pleasure to get to talk to you here today. So
let's really go into NFT art. Like, that's okay. The punchline of this.
Most definitely.
Podcast. You know, obviously I have a lot of entrepreneurs, but I really, really want to go into the history of you and this moment.
Yeah.
You know, for people that see the title and click it, you know, that are really deep in our NFT world, I'm gonna say it so you don't have to, because I know you're a humble kid. Like, you know, it's very difficult for me to think of 10 artists that have more of an opportunity to be, you know, truly one of the names that people talk about in 30, 60, 90 years. I don't think there's any confusion for anybody paying attention that we're in this moment right now where the forefathers and mothers, where the you know, I read Boom a couple summers. I don't read books, and I read Boom about contemporary art three summers ago, I can't remember now, but mainly because I wanted more insight to what I saw happening in the sports card world.
Okay.
I can't believe what happened, because only a couple years later, NFT world happens, mm-hmm. and me not only reading that book, but Googling my ass off about going deeper on the little bit I already knew about Pollock or Warhol.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, my friend Kevin Rose, who I know is a big fan of your work.
Right.
And I did a podcast yesterday we recorded, which will be coming out in a couple of days. I don't know the timing when we can do this. And he told me, I had not known this one, I like this kind of stuff, that when Canvas first hit the scene, that people in the art world said that wasn't real art, because real art had to be on a wall.
Yeah. Yeah. And
Canvas could be damaged and this and that.
Right.
And so
you know, it was all frescoes and church walls before that, right?
Correct. Yeah. And so humans continue to make the same mistake. This isn't art. This is art. Yeah, and then that becomes the art. That's right.
Yeah. So I kind of honestly, I'm surprised. Like, I thought we'd seen that play out so many times that more people would kind of be looking for that same thing to happen again. And it seems like NFTs are just like the latest incantation of that.
Humans are incredibly good at seeing the world through their selfish frame, or the frame of their own insecurity, not from the lens of history.
Most definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and NFTs are, it's a neutral technological platform on its own. It's a sister system of record keeping. There is a particular culture that's associated with it right now, but, to say in any way that, real art can't be, published as an NFT, sold as an NFT, you know, designed as an NFT in mind, seems pretty preposterous from where I'm sitting at.
Me as well, my friend. And when people listen to this podcast in 39 years, they'll be like, wow, they knew. So to that point, let's get into it.
Yeah.
What I'm really excited about is you're really one of those icons in my mind. So I think a lot of people are about to be inspired to start. Others are going to be inspired to consider. And others will be inspired to collect your work or people like yourself. So let's start with this. How did you get to the place, in your opinion, using candor, not just, don't be overly humble. How did you get to a point where you're sitting on my podcast community and I feel compelled to say these things about you, not because I'm being overly nice, because I want to be historically correct.
Right.
You know,
right.
How'd we get here?
I asked myself that a fair amount, but I think, you know, I think the most important aspect by far is just the artwork itself. So, you know, most of my time has been spent working on my artwork, refining that, learning about other artists, trying to spend as much time as possible developing my work and making it as good as possible. And, you know, I did that for, you know, a decade and a half before NFTs were even something that I was looking at. So,
Tyler, that artwork yeah. was physical, or that artwork was 100% digital?
Yeah, so I started out in the physical realm. So I started out with traditional drawing and painting and kind of paid my dues, so to speak, learning all the kind of traditional backgrounds and graphic design. And about 2014 is whenever I first started working digitally. And that's when I started working with generative art, with algorithmic art. So this is what I do today, which is I write programs that generate artwork. And so about 2014, I started experimenting with that, and I got super hooked on it. I felt like it was much more interesting and much more relevant to our time and to me personally. And so that's really what I focused on since 2014. I was 25, I think, approximately. What year was I born? 1987. So wait, you're gonna make me do math live on air. Something close to that.
I'll save you time. 27.
27. Okay, there you go. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
So spoken like a true artist, by the way. take me further back. You're born where, and what kind of kid were you? Are we drawing at 5 years old and into it? Give me that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I grew up in Central Texas, so close to Austin, basically suburbs around Austin. I've pretty much lived here my entire life. And growing up, I always liked making artwork. I was not some kind of prodigy kid, right? So I was good, but I was not Picasso making, you know, incredible paintings at the age of seven. But I was fortunate that my parents, you know, got me into painting lessons after school, where I was working with, you know,
are either of your parents into art?
Not really. My dad's a doctor, and my mom, she raised us, my siblings and I, and she did do some really amazing quilting, which I think has had a stylistic influence on me. But not particularly creative, and they definitely didn't know about like the art world, and so I had a pretty average kind of education along those lines. But I started, you know, getting books of like Van Gogh paintings and things like that, and it just really, really resonated with me. And say again,
siblings?
I have older brother who was kind of a self-taught hacker, and that's kind of how I got into programming. And my younger sister is studied engineering and has had kind of an interesting life, but not really artistic either. So just me.
Keep going. So yeah, you start, you know, you're into painting after school.
Yeah. Yeah. I started doing things like copying Van Gogh paintings, trying to like recreate them. Actually did some pretty good versions of that. Those taught me quite a bit. Did a lot of this kind of semi-formal painting training. And when it came time for college, I wanted to go to art school, but my dad was a little more pragmatic. He wasn't a super huge fan of that, for kind of obvious reasons, and he encouraged me to go for computer science instead, which I had been doing computer science at high school, and my brother was kind of doing that, so it made sense to me to do that as a career, and it was interesting. So that's what I studied, was computer science at the University of Texas at Austin. And started working as like a programmer right out of school. Art was what I was always working on in my spare time, and it's always what I was thinking about long term, and what I felt kind of had the most interesting challenges long term for me, something I wouldn't get bored with, and something that felt a little bit more personal and meaningful. And so that's really why I've been pursuing art, I think.
I love that. So this is so cliche and obvious how we got here now based on that.
Yeah.
So when do the gears really get going? You started talking about, I want to go back to it.
Yeah.
So makes sense. You're programming. Mm-hmm. Why? You're falling in love with art, literally. Yeah. That, like, when I first heard about generative stuff, 12, 14, 15 months ago, I was like, literally the person that I thought was going to most win in that was literally the story that you just told of your life. Yeah. Like, oh, that's going to be for the kids that are nerds with tech. They can do it.
Yeah.
They can code, but they have an artistic streak. Oh, like I always love when a technology comes along that's made for a certain person when that didn't exist before. Look at your life. You were Jekyll and Hyde, Bruce Wayne, Batman. You had to live like these different lives because they didn't come together. All of a sudden, the blockchain is at the right time, at the right moment. Generative art movement happens, and you're friends of now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I felt like I was just teed up perfectly for everything that happened with NFTs in 2021, especially, you know, Artblocks, platform for creating generative artwork on the blockchain, right? So the basic idea is you write the generative script itself to the blockchain, and then you generate NFTs from that script directly, and you can sort of prove that the work that's coming into the hands of the collector is direct output from that script. And so it's a really powerful way to create generative artwork. And it creates a really interesting artistic challenge as well. Like this is somewhat different from the type of generative work that I and other generative artists were making prior to NFTs. So it's actually really enabled a new type of artwork. And I think the artists that have done well were ones that maybe we're open-minded and had that kind of work ready to go as soon as these technologies around the blockchain started to develop, and then it just, as you saw, it took off like crazy in 2021. It was just like the curve went straight up at a certain point, and I feel really fortunate that I already kind of had my shit together at that point.
I could just hop on. Being empathetic to the crowd, and you're saying some things that I can follow along because I've been deep in this the last year and a half, but knowing that most haven't, talk us through, we missed a part, and I'm going to go to it now to help people connect on where you just went. So now you're doing physical, you're Jekyll and hiding it, blah, blah, blah. And then you said 14 is when you started going digital.
Right.
Why, how, and exactly what were you making?
Yeah. Okay. So, 2014. I've just been making traditional work. I've been doing a lot of, a lot of studies, a lot of like figure drawing, kind of getting all the basics really solid. And I felt like my art was good, but it was very generic. Like it was very generically good. It wasn't really unique to me. And some of the advice that I heard for artists that resonated with me was that you really have to make it personal. You have to make the kind of work that only you could make. You have to involve, whatever special elements of your life you can bring to the table. Those are going to make your artwork more personal. And I highly recommend this advice for every artist. But for me, that was programming. Like that was such a big part of my life, and it influenced the way that I really thought about things. So I knew I had to involve programming in the artwork. It wasn't exactly obvious how to do that. I had quite a few failed attempts of like mixing math into hand-drawn things. But eventually I had the idea of, can I just write a program that generates a painting? And I kind of took the tools, software tools that I had, cobbled something together. And
software tools you had?
This was a Matplotlib, which is like a scientific charting library. You normally use it to draw like graphs, but you can kind of finagle it into making artwork. Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of a hacky approach. I didn't know that there were better tools for it at the time.
What were the better tools for it at the time?
So processing. This is something that Casey Reese and Ben Fry put together, and it's really enabled a whole generation of generative artists to work.
So generative artists adore those guys?
Oh, absolutely. They're legendary. Casey's been so meaningful and so influential for the space. Probably the most important generative artist to date, I would say, is Casey Reese. And Ben Fry's still maintaining processing. So, huge props to them for doing that. And that's a big reason why generative art is also having this moment. These people put so much time and love into creating these tools that enabled a whole generation of artists, especially programmers, to be artists and to express themselves. And I think it really resonates with people right now because programming is so central to our lives right now. Like, even if you're not a programmer, you probably spend at least 8 hours a day in front of a screen interacting with software, right? These are things that programmers have constructed. And so kind of those basic tools of code are what our whole environment is being built with today. So I think it's really, really important that artwork is also built with those same things. And I think that'll just help to, you know, kind of humanize our digital environments, help us to have a better and more enjoyable relationship with software, if it's not just all like written by, you know, Amazon and Facebook, right? Like, I want artists to be able to fully utilize those same tools. And I think that's what's really important about generative artwork and other art forms that work directly with programming and code.
Do you think the historical artwork felt that coding is too nerdy and too ones and zeros and too tech bro and this and
big time? Yeah. So generative art started in the 1960s, and man, it got they went through some hard time, like really bad critical rap. People were being on it left and right. I think the reaction there was that they felt like some element of humanity was lost by creating robots, artwork through computers.
Robots are making the art. The end of the world,
right?
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, and it's easy to see like maybe why they felt that, but at this point that feels like a really naive assumption, right?
I would argue that 95% of the people listening to this podcast right now who are incredibly curious and open-minded and entrepreneurial, because
the same way
listening to my podcast, which is like, I just know that community, even for them, I think that they can easily feel the chemicals in their body of why, well, that's kind of weird. Like, write code, hit enter, and then there's art. Like, that feels, and I'm empathetic to that. I just don't agree.
Yeah. I think it takes a mental shift a little bit, right? Like, computers are the most powerful and important tools we've ever come up with. And they totally revolutionize everything, and they enable just so much more that we haven't been able to do before. And that same thing applies to artwork. Like, it would be just such a waste if we didn't create the best artwork we could by fully utilizing computers as well. They're just a tool. And in the hands of the right artist, they can make incredibly beautiful things. And I think...
it's really no different than paint versus a pencil. Like, why is a painting better than a sketch or vice versa? It's not.
It's not.
I mean, this has been my biggest problem with the art conversation. The hypocrisy is disgusting. Like, you will literally watch someone talk about art, eye of the beholder. They'll talk about why they love something, and then somebody brings something completely different, and like, that's not art. I'm like, what the f***? Don't you understand that your thing was done too? There's not anything in the world that is art today that wasn't originally done by the prior art thing.
Absolutely. Every single artistic movement, every new artistic technology, like cameras, right? When cameras came out, people didn't think you could make real art with cameras. It took like decades for that to be accepted. And now we don't even think twice about that being a possibility, right? So I think people will feel exactly the same way about generative art in 10 years.
You're still a young guy, very, very young. And I'm listening to you talk, and my observation is the following. I started with this, and now you're actually in those shoes. Do you have and this is where I'm going to need you to, you know, like answer it actually, and don't be too humble. Do you actually, you know, you've got some momentum. Obviously you're like, hey, I got a lot more work to do. I respect all that.
Sure.
But even where you're at in the space now, and I can tell, you know, the timing of it. Do you think like, oh, weird, I'm going to be 80 and 20-year-old kids are going to be like, tell me what it was like in the old, like do you have a sense that you're going down that path?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I think here's probably what's going to play out is like the kids that that are growing up seeing all this stuff being made, right? Even just the people that are teenagers right now watching this going on, they're going to absolutely dunk on my work in like no time, right? Like, I'm going to be the old fashioned dude before no time.
That's right. From a technology advancement standpoint, they're going to dunk on it. But let me give you an actual dunk on it.
Okay.
LeBron James would dominate Oscar Robinson in basketball.
Yeah.
Because of the evolution of the human.
Right.
And the game. But I promise you, when LeBron James, through the last 20 years, crossed paths with the Big O, he kissed the ring of the legendary status of it.
Absolutely.
And that's what's so cool about the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, that's right. The six-year-old today that will listen to this in 7 years.
Yeah.
And will crush you
in yeah.
15 years from like a technical and da-da-da.
Right.
She will still always say that you, like, that's what's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's how I feel about all the predecessors, right? So like people like Casey Reese and all the traditional painters that have massively influenced me.
Why don't
right?
we, like, you know, I've been hot on this. I'm sorry to interrupt. I've been hot on this. Yeah. I like to give out roses more often. You've okay. already done a little bit of it. Just rattle off some names that you think deserve some Googling from the people listening right now. And do they have NFTs for people to go discover? And who do you think's underrated as a pioneer that has NFTs that people, because people love a good little alpha that might be nice for the community.
Yeah, okay, okay. I mean, the alpha one person that just came to mind is this artist, Holger Lippmann, who's he's a German artist, and he was making generative work before I was. He was one of the people that I saw that really inspired me. I think he has a great sense for color and for form and rhythm. And so he was making really beautiful generative artwork that I saw when I was first getting started. And he just put out.
How's that spelled?
Holger Lippmann, Holger. And then Lippmann is, I think, Lippmann. And he just put out 100 NFTs with Bright Moments in their Berlin show that's going on right now. I think he deserves a lot more recognition. Other contemporary artists that are doing fantastic work. Let's see, off the top of my head, Sophia Crespo is doing really amazing GAN work that I think is just super high quality. There's a bunch of generative artists that I think are already making amazing work. Dimitri Cherniak and Matt Delaurier and Chetel Golid, and I'm gonna forget names, Ben Kovach. These are all people from the generative art scene that I've been watching work for, you know, 5 years or more at this point, and they've been consistently making amazing work. And so I think that kind of, you want that type of track record. You want to see that the artist has been serious for a long time. I think that's a really helpful
Especially in
indicator.
This space, mm-hmm. You know, I've really
That's how you don't up. Get rugged, right? Yeah.
That's right. Like as you can tell by my background, love collecting things. So I'm a little more tchotchkes, collectibles, comic books, sports cards. So as you can imagine, the PFP thing really works for me, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, while everyone's chasing the 2021, 2022 projects, I want to buy Plasma Bears. Like I want to buy, you know, Mooncat. I want to buy like, you know, Crypto Strikers. Like I like the Crypto Skulls. Like anything pre-2021, you know, it's maybe 2020 was like an in-between year, but like for me, if I find 2019, 18, 17 Ethereum projects, I get excited.
Yeah, yeah. There's not a ton of super early generative work. I mean, autoglyphs are kind of the classic example, but those things are already crazy expensive. You know, if you want to go OG, the original, some of the earliest generative art from late 1960s, early 1970s is still massively, massively underpriced in my mind. You can get amazing work for $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. This is legendary.
Tell me about that. Is that an NFT or is that just digital art?
That's just in most cases, this is work that was designed digitally, but then plotted onto paper. So they didn't even have normal printers at that point in time. And these artists were working with plotters, which were kind of like a simple 2D robot. You stick a pen in it and you give it instructions for something to draw. This is how a lot of generative artists started back in the day. You can get these plotter drawings still for very reasonable prices. And all those artists had a huge influence on myself and many of the other generative artists that are working today.
And Tyler, those are framed like on paper art. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And where does one find that? eBay or is that more stuff?
Yeah, it's harder. There you kind of have to like talk to galleries and those types of places. So I wish that it was as simple as NFTs. That's part of, I think, why NFTs have such a big price difference with some of this traditional work is. It's such a better marketplace. Like you can see everything that's out there. You can tell exactly what everybody else is paying and, you know, how much they bought it for, who owns what. And so it's just so much more transparent. And I think it just makes for a much healthier marketplace versus the traditional art world where things are kind of locked up and hidden away. And sometimes they only sell to specific people. They won't just sell to any dude who walks in the door with a, you know, a bag of money, right? So, I wish the traditional art world was as easy to collect as NFTs. Not yet, though. Not yet. I think they'll figure it out over time, though.
Right, because what you're alluding to is what I'm most excited about in this whole space, which is the NFTization of physical items that sit in temperature-controlled, fireproof warehouses. And now I'm creating an NFT that represents the physical. And if I want the physical in my apartment, I burn the NFT and get it. Otherwise, it just keeps trading, correct?
Yeah, I mean, debatable about the burn the NFT part. I think we'll see multiple different arrangements of how the NFT and the physical are related, right? Like whether they're kind of like legally bound to be together, whether they're allowed to kind of be separate, whether you have to pick one or the other, right? Like there's the Damien Hirst project that's really interesting called Currency. Yeah, so
which was awesome.
Doesn't know.
That was on launch where you made the decision. Whereas what I'm talking, I'm sorry.
It's actually, Damien Hirst, the richest artist in the world right now, last year came out with Currency, right? He made whatever it is, 3,000 of his dot paintings. They're like this big. And so he sold all the NFTs. And I think this summer, in like a 1-year anniversary, everybody that holds the NFT has to pick, do I want the NFT or do I want the painting, right? Yep. And it's really, really fascinating to see what happens because You're literally have the option to have a painting from like the most successful living artist, and I think most people are going to pick the NFT over the painting. That's my guess, and that'll be a really groundbreaking moment to really demonstrate I think the seriousness of this new market. Fascinating project by Damien Hirst.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's one of the more interesting things going on in the space. To me, it's the reverse because he launched it that way. Everybody knew from day one, you were going to have a 1 year to make a decision, burn or keep, right? To me, what I'm talking about is my Michael Jordan rookie card. Whatever company or companies, you see where I'm going? A little bit post game, my Michael Jordan rookie card. Or for example, I'm like Googling as you're talking, like I definitely want to buy some original 60s generative art. I'm going to have because it's just cool. When I have that, if one day in 15 years, I want to send that into a company that creates an NFT that represents that exact thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I hold the NFT. Then I could actually trade it. Like if my friend Mike buys it, he might buy it because he thinks I undersold it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have to take the physical. He may continue to want to trade on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Back to your thing on, I wish it was as easy to collect. Well, it can be if companies, and I believe the future eBay will be this, or if eBay has this, I believe much like data centers for Amazon cloud services and all, you know, what's happened in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Cause you know a little bit about enough about tech to know what I'm saying. I actually think we're in the precipice of having ungodly amounts of warehouses built around the world. Yeah. Fireproof and temperature controlled to take on physical items, to issue NFTs that represent that physical item. They're traded. The sixth fire gal that gets the vase actually wants it in their home. Thus they quote unquote call the NFT. They have to burn it so it goes off the blockchain to represent it. This is where I'm going. Now takes the vase and has it. And if she 7 years later wants to put it back up, she resends it. A new NFT is, and so they're tied together. See where, like a Merkaba.
No, I think you're right. I think something along those lines could really, really happen. And one interesting element that will probably support this is, you know, what's awfully nice about NFTs is it makes it so much easier to show your collection off to other people, right? So normally, like, you know, I've got like painting on my wall, right? The only people that get to see this are people that physically come to my home. When you have this digital work, when you have something that's especially in an NFT, there's so much tooling and platforms to share that work with other people. Like people are enjoying other people's collections so much more than before with NFTs because it's so much easier to show off your collection. So I think a lot of physical work will be NFTized and shown in, like, you know, virtual galleries just because it's so much easier to for other people to enjoy that. And You know, a few people here and there will be able to see the physical work, but really, you know, 99% of people are going to be seeing the work on the internet or virtual reality or whatever. So it makes more sense to have the work well documented and well, shown in that space to me. So
talk about the explosion of Fidenza. A, okay. How the name come up. B, your entire NFT trajectory. Like, okay. I love these stories. I have a lot of collectors, and I think people will enjoy, like, oh, you put it out and it was a dollar and now it's what? Yeah. Like, give me that.
Okay. I'll try to stick to the facts here. Okay. So early 2021, I done nothing with NFTs, and everybody I know starts DMing me saying, you got to get into NFTs. Like, this is the jam. This is
now work. January, February, March.
Exactly. Like January, February. Yeah. End of February, I see.
I apologize real quick. I apologize because this is important context. The digital generative art you were making up to that point.
I was selling that as like unique prints rather than NFTs. Yeah.
Unique prints. Mm-hmm. So it would do the thing and you would print it out and sell it.
Yeah, exactly.
And for everyone's context, how much would those be?
You know, those were selling between, at that time, like $500 and, maybe $2,500, something like that. Yeah. A piece.
And you would make those one of ones or?
Yeah, I was doing unique prints. So with generative art, you know, I can generate multiple images from the same.
That's pretty successful.
Yeah. For an artist, I was able to support myself full time at that point. Not a luxurious lifestyle or whatever, but, I was able to eke it out at that point. And it had taken me years and years of work and building up my collector base in order to be able to do that.
How much were your original pieces on print going for? 25
You mean like whenever I first started, the first prints I ever sold? Yeah. Think they were like 50 or 100 bucks, something like that. So.
And where are those? And who's got those? And can you send them my way?
Yeah, I have records of it. Honestly, I probably need to like email some of those people and tell them to like be careful with their prints.
We'll talk offline. About that. All right.
Okay. 2021. I've been selling these prints, right? People are telling me, got to get into NFTs. I see one of my favorite artists, Chetel Gola, do this project called Archetype on Artblocks. And I see that Dmitry Cherniak has also done Ringers on Artblocks. And these are amazing projects. And I can just tell right away, I need to do this. This is like perfect for my work.
Right. You see two other people that you would say you aspire to be like, you feel like you're like their kinship. They're your people. They did it. I mean, Ringers is such a beautiful project. You love it. And you're like, let's go.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like that evening I sent in an email to Eric and Jeff at Artblocks
You known Snowfro already?
No, I had not known Snowfro. Apparently he had been following my work, but I didn't know who he was. And, this was the first I'd heard of Artblocks. And so I sent this email and, I was like, hey, I have this project. It looks kind of like this. Can I get in the queue to be an Artblocks project? I'm still going to work on it some, but here's what I've got right now. And, he emailed me back and he was like, you can't believe, you know, how excited I was to read your email. Like, let's do this. So I still had to wait in line. It was like 3 months, until Fidenza would launch, but I was working every day, really improving it, polishing it, doing everything that I could for it. And, Fidenza initially sold, so it's 999 iterations, 999, unique NFTs from the same algorithm. So they're related, but each one is different. And, the initial sales price was like 0.17 ETH, I think. So it was like something like $400, maybe $450. I can't remember. So this was like going to be by far like the biggest project I had ever done, just with those numbers. And that was really gonna, you know, in my mind, help me get set up as an artist, working full time, have a little more financial security. So everything sold out in like 20 minutes, something like that. And then people started getting, I think, really excited about the work. They started to dig in. And one of the cool things about Fidenza is just it has a lot of variety and a lot of really interesting corners and outliers to the algorithm. So as people started to look more and more at the output, I think they really started to understand how generative art could work this way and really get a feel for the algorithm. And so the price just started going up and up. And then, it was like, at some points it was like doubling every week.
The numbers, the numbers got absolutely crazy.
They got crazy. There was one point where the, you know, the floor was like, I don't know, like almost like 200 ETH. And I remember like calculating the valuation, and it was like all of Fidenza, the valuation, the floor valuation was like $1 billion for the whole algorithm. And I was like, okay, I know this is like
that, you know, 7-8 months ago, was that making you uncomfortable when they were, you know, I remember 313 for 1,000 Ethereum, right?
That's right. Yeah. Number 313 sold for 1,000 ETH to Punk 6529. Hope I got those numbers in the right order. And yeah, I mean, it was a total trip. Like I felt like I was a, like, you know, Alice in Wonderland kind of experience. Every day things were happening. They were just blowing my mind. And of course it felt great, but it's also, you know, any sort of change is uncomfortable, right? Even if it's like positive change. And so I could feel that things were like totally shifting under my feet.
Did you feel pressure? Do you like, is there a part of you that likes that we're in the 40 to 60 range right now on Fidenza? Do you feel like a hair more comfortable?
Yeah, it feels more sane. It feels like it has more basis in reality, like in relation to everything else. There's less mania going on right now. You know, there was definitely a moment of
good.
Yeah. I think it's a healthier, I want that like, you know, plateau of productivity in the hype cycle, whatever. I think that's what it's called. That's where I want to be. I want people to be making rational, healthy decisions about what to collect, not just FOMOing into projects, you know?
There were people buying your project that knew nothing about it. I was getting pinged by people. They're like, should I buy a Fidenza? I'm like, and literally every time, the first thing I would reply is, what do you know about it?
Right. Yeah. And that's great advice. Like, don't just like throw your money at a random project. Like, you know, when I collect artists who I know have been creating high quality work and are like committed to developing themselves as artists.
Tyler, do you feel pressure to justify how expensive this shit is? Like, are you like, this is awesome, comma, to like, like, you know, just getting a sense of you.
Right.
First, we're going deeper and chopping it up. Like, is there a part of you that's like, okay, I, you know, this is amazing. This is, I can't believe I can tell my parents somebody spent $3 million on a piece of my art.
Right.
Like, my brother and sister, like, what the? Like all my friends, family, I'm sure there's all these like fun stuff, but there has to be those nights. I mean, I feel it with V friends.
Yeah.
I'm out here spewing that I'm going to build Walt Disney. And I'm like, you know, I really believe it. Right. I fully expect to do it. I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing it.
Right.
But occasionally in the shower, brushing my teeth.
Yeah.
All right, man. Like, this is like a real, like, it's not even the Walt Disney. I'm going to build Disney. I actually fully believe that. It's the day in and day out that like, ping, you know, the V friends bot ping somebody and it says somebody just spent $180,000 on this puffin.
And I drew
and I'm like, man, I really have, you know, my brain goes immediately to, I'm gonna kill it for that puffin. Like, do you feel that?
I feel the pressure from like the perspective of I want to live up to, I guess, the expectations in a certain way, right? Like I want to make the best artwork that I can at this point. It's really helped me to raise the bar for the type of work that I'll produce now. You know, I take it very seriously. On the other hand, I know that I have to divorce myself from the market and that the market doesn't reflect like the quality of the work, right? Like, Fidenza sold it at one value at one time, they sold for a different value at a different time, and now they sell it at another value, and it's the exact same work. So clearly there's like some disconnect between the market and the quality of work, right? And I think as the artist, like to let yourself sleep at night, just like you got to be more hands off from that stuff.
That's what I tell every founder of every PFP project. I'm like, if you listen to your Discord and you care about the floor price, you're dead on arrival.
Yeah. Most definitely. Like that's not where your head should be at as the artist. Like that's not how you create good work. That's not how you do your best work. That's not how you do the best, make the best choices for your collectors either. You know, I think you have to, think long-term and really make, ethical and intelligent decisions about what you're doing.
You're here to that. Are you working on more stuff now?
Oh God, am I working on more stuff? Yeah. The most stuff I've ever worked on at once. Lots of cool projects.
And will these projects have different names? Like, you, you know, people refer to you as Fidenza now.
Yeah.
Are you gonna keep that as your kind of monarchy, or you?
No. That's just one project, and you asked me to explain the name, and I accidentally glossed over that. I was trying to pick a name for the work, and sometimes I like to pick things that don't have a real strong inherent meaning, and so sometimes I use town names, oftentimes small Texas town names. I was looking around for one in Texas that fit, and nothing quite did. So I went in Google Maps over to Italy, and I was kind of panning around, and this little town, 25,000 people, called Fidenza, just stood out to me as a cool name. I was like, wow, okay, I'm going to call this project Fidenza. So that's what that one was. But every work, every algorithm gets a new name. And
before I die, I'm making this promise to myself. Before I die, hopefully in 55 years, I am going to buy a Fidenza while I'm in Fidenza.
Yeah. You know, the mayor of Fidenza. I'm very meta. The mayor of Fidenza DM'd me on Twitter, so I can help you set that up.
Yeah, can you hook that up?
Yeah.
Where is it? What's the closest?
It's like northern Italy. It's like 3 hours north of Rome. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's like there's literally not that much going on.
So what? You literally are Google mapping.
Yeah.
You're looking at names. You like the name. You zoom in. You make sure that you kind of get a little like vibe.
A little feel for it. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a special town, you know, it's just some town.
Art really excites me. This has been such a profound moment in my life. You know, I had so much more of it in me than I ever showed the world.
Right.
But if you really peeled the onion, it was there. I'll give you an example. I don't know what about you doing Google Map Fidenza work made me just think about. I literally was talking to somebody just now, earlier this morning, and realized I love optimism more than anything.
Yeah.
Which led me to say, wait a minute, I have not done enough character development around the optimistic otter in VFriends.
Okay. Yeah.
And like literally like have been for like the last 2 hours while I'm doing this podcast and thinking about my meetings and thinking about what I have to do. There's like 3% of my brain that is working right now that I can feel that is ideating on how I have to make the optimistic otter a more important character in VFriends from a creative artistic lens.
Yeah.
What is the otter gonna do? Who's the otter's friends gonna be? Am I gonna make it a cartoon? Do I make that a video game? Like, I love creativity.
By the way, how does it feel for you to be an artist now? Like, do you think of yourself as an artist?
You know, I used to always think of entrepreneurship as art. Definitely. Like I really think being an entrepreneur is incredibly artistic.
Yeah.
If you're a purebred entrepreneur, you adore artists because you know your creativity, your lack of fear, if you're pure. Yeah. Like the problem with entrepreneurship is there's money.
Right.
What's also about art is like starving artists is romantic and respected. Right. The tough part of being an artistic entrepreneur is the money part clouds it and it can look dark. Yeah. But it's such a pure game of art.
Yeah. The motivation for the person running it, if they're doing it well, they almost certainly don't just care about the money, right? Like they barely care about the money, right? Like it's just
I'm
like
in a weird place where it's outside collateral noise to the process.
Yeah.
I'm aware of it. I'm grateful for it. It's not like I'm not demonizing it. Like I love it for people. For me, it's all about freedom, which I don't think is just predicated about money.
Right.
But of course, money is one of the pillars of freedom, depending on how one looks at the world. I just like being artistic.
Yeah. And it seems like you're thinking deeply about at least the motivations for what you're doing, right? Like optimistic otter, right? Like I love that. So we need more optimism.
My why, when I like really, I've been saying it, but only a few people are paying attention, aka a million. That's a lot less than 8 billion. When the world realizes what I'm actually doing with this project, I'm very excited about the positivity and practicality that I'm going to bring into the world because of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's super important.
I've got to run to something, ironically, in VFriends land. I'm sorry to cut this short. We'll have to do a part two, but you're fantastic. I'm cheering for you heavy. And if I could ever be a help, please let me know.
Thank you so much, Gary. Yeah, likewise. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, brother. Take care.
You too.